your future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who win it now?
Welcome into the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. It's me, Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, our man John Belmer behind the glass. And Cam, you're in a much more favorable microphone position, so
yes.
Congratulations to that.
Thank you.
No Sean Mapes today. Sean is, I'll let him tell his own story, but just quick summary. He's decided to take a little step back, at least for a little while. He'll join us probably once a month, but no Sean Mapes today. But you still have the three of us, and you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Sack by BMAC. Cam is at Clutch City Cam, and Johnny is at Third Coast Johnny. John, I don't know if you heard Cam saying this right before he went on the air, but Cam, you know, complained to us when he came in. He's like, man, I didn't have time to get my food. He missed the window for breakfast at the Greek place down the street, so he didn't get his breakfast sandwich. So I'm asking him if he's going to be okay. I'm worried about it. You know, he looked a little famished. He said, oh, yeah, I got some snacks. So I asked him, oh, okay, what'd you bring? He's like, yogurt, banana, raw sausage. And I'm like, wait, hold on, what? Because he apparently is going thought about cooking sausage up here. And as Johnny, as you know, we don't have a grill, we don't have a stove. Dude was going to microwave raw sausage in our dirty ass microwave.
That microwave's sketchy, bro. I don't know.
What are you doing, Cam?
First off, it was a morning thought as I was rushing.
Well, it's not just a thought. You have it here.
I do have it here in preparation that I don't have time because I'm going to be here until 9 o'clock at night. So if I don't have time to get food, I was like, worst case scenario, you know, I got this
raw sausage.
I'm put this raw sausage in some Tupperware and microwave it. But the more I think about it, there's no way I'm going to actually.
Worst case scenario should be spending like $20 for Uber Eats. Not even Uber Eats.
We got the conservatory downstairs.
That's true too. Yeah. There's plenty of food right below us.
Plenty of food. Great food downstairs. Yes. They got great.
I was just giving myself options to snack on throughout the day.
I can't imagine where I would rank microwaving raw sausage in Tupperware in a dirty microwave at work. Where that would rank on my list of options.
Desperate.
It ranks on as desperate.
Desperate.
Okay. All right. All right. Let's try this on for a transition here. Great the transition, Johnny. Speaking of desperation, the Texans were desperate to get wide receiver help. And after the news of Christian Kirk being released by the Jaguars, the Texans said, nah, we'll trade you a seventh, and we'll go ahead and take Christian Kirk off your hands.
B-minus.
B-minus? All right, I'll take that. Hey, B's get degrees, but man, I'll take it. Certainly, I got through high school C's, let's be real. I'm in radio. But Christian Kirk, 1 year left on his contract. He'll be an unrestricted free agent after the 2025 season. About $16 million on his contract. I think it's like 16.2 or 16.5 for this season, so less than they're paying Stephon Diggs. But what are your overall thoughts, Cam, when you saw the news that the Texans have made the trade of a seventh-round pick for Christian Kirk?
I mean, I liked it. Obviously, we all know that Christian Kirk is not going to be one, and he's most likely not going
to
be a two.
No, he doesn't have to be the one, obviously.
Yeah, but he's a very serviceable three. I know that he's had a few injury problems the last few years, but when he can stay healthy, he's been relatively productive. I think his 17-game average, if he was to obviously play all 17 games, would be just below 1,000 yards a season and right around 5 touchdowns, which if you're getting that out of your 2/3, that's pretty good. And he only cost a seventh, so.
Yeah, you gave up nothing. It's basically the same deal that brought you Joe Mixon the year prior. Like, he was also someone that the Bengals had announced they were going to cut, and Texans said, not so fast, my friend,
yeah.
Corso style, and traded them a seventh. So you're right. Like, he's been a guy. He's only started, 19 games the last two seasons because he had a groin tear that cost him 5 games in 2023. And then last year, he broke his shoulder clavicle. That cost him 9 games to end his 2024 season. So he's a guy, I think, that comes into this year where, like, if he gives you 12, 13 games, you're like, okay, cool. Like, I don't think you can reasonably expect, you know, 15, 16, 17 games. But when he's been healthy, like you said, he's been productive. 2021, while he was still with the Cardinals, he went 77 catches for 982 yards, 5 touchdowns. And then 2022, his best year, first year in Jacksonville, he had 84 catches for 1,100 yards and 8 touchdowns. So I think he is a guy that's capable of being a little bit above a league average wide receiver too. And so I think you look at the Texans wide receiver room now, Nico Collins is clearly your one. I think Christian Kirk, for this year at least, see if they talk about a re-signing like they did with Joe Mixon. I think he's a pretty serviceable two when he's healthy. And then maybe you look at your third wide receiver as someone you get in the draft. And then John Metchie, Xavier Hutchinson are your 4 and 5, which I think is where they needed to be. Like, I was worried about the Texans wide receiver room when it was Nico Collins. And then the only thing else he had under contract was Xavier Hutchinson and John Metchie. So I guess the question to both of you is, do you feel like they've now, obviously depending upon what they do in the draft, but do you feel like they fixed their wide receiver room going into next season?
I don't think they necessarily fixed it, but I mean, they definitely closed the gap on it. I mean, I don't think that they were willing to wait going into the draft, possibly not signing another big free agent wide receiver, literally going into the draft with just Nico Collins. Like, because you're going to have to replace Diggs. You're obviously going to have to replace Tank. So, I mean, this receiver core is depleted, and I think that they just didn't want to risk not signing a name before going into the draft, which is why I think they pulled the trigger on Christian Kirk. And not to mention, he's also a Texas guy, so it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, play at Texas A&M.
Yeah, so I think it'll be a good fit.
Johnny, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm with both of y'all. I think this is, especially for a 7, a steal, right? You get Joe Mixon last year for this, and then now Christian Kirk. I think Nick Casario's a little bit on fire with those 7-round picks. But here's what I love about this is I agree with you, B-Mac. Like, okay, last year when the Texans went and took a shot at Deontay Johnson, there were people thinking, okay, if he can like show out, maybe he can become that number two guy behind Nico. I think by punting on him and going with Christian Kirk, you essentially get something similar here for a 7th-round pick, and I think somebody that can take some pressure off of, like, when teams are trying to take Nico out of the game, Stroud's going to have a target that he can throw to that's fast, that can beat his guy, and I think that is a huge plus for the Texans. But you didn't. I noticed Tank was not mentioned there amongst receivers here. I know he's hurt.
He's not going to play this season.
No, but he is a part of the team in the future going forward. I don't want to forget that he exists.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. I mean, I feel like Tank's, and I know I'm sitting next to a UH guy. I feel like Tank's career is just, like, officially cursed at this point. I don't know what sort of burial ground his career started on top of, but it feels like between the, you know, asked to being an inline blocker down near the goal line, and then some random ass wide receiver I had never heard of running the same route as him and taking him out during the Chiefs game this last season. I don't know, because, like, you're right. Like, I think he misses all this season, and the injury's so severe. Like, you don't really know what type of player, in my opinion, he'll be when he gets back. It wasn't just an ACL; it was everything, including his damn kneecap. And when he does get back, let's say he misses all of 2025. I think that's a given. Whatever form he shows up in 2026 will be the last year of his contract, because he was a third-round pick, so they don't have that fifth year as part of the rookie contract. That'll be his final year. And that's a lot to ask. I mean, maybe that means the Texans can get him back on the cheap, but that's a lot to ask for a guy coming back from a serious injury as he did to then have to go out and be in a contract year and prove it. Like, I mean, that's – I don't know. I'm not saying his career's over, but I'm not optimistic about Tank Dell going forward.
That's fair.
Yeah, and I mean, we kind of saw this with Metchie. You know, they knew his situation, so I think they were okay with kind of playing maybe like the long game, letting him see what he can do when he comes back. I think they might try and do that with Tank. The only problem is Tank has been shot and has had two.
Yeah, we didn't even mention that he got shot.
Shot and two major injuries.
Like that's the least amount of, like, of all the things that's happened to him, like, this is a crazy thing to say out loud, but being shot might be the least problematic thing for his future.
Which is crazy. And the thing is, even if he comes back in 2026, I find it very hard to believe that they're just going to throw him back out there for the majority of the plays. Like,
you can't depend on him.
Yeah, he's brittle. He's had two major leg injuries. Like, it just, if you can bring him back on the cheap, cool. But, like, what are you really going to get out of him if you're worried about pushing him 100%. So I think this is just a really weird kind of situation that they're going to find themselves in. But if Stroud is still here, which he most likely is going to be, we know that Tank is his guy.
He better be.
Yeah, they'll pay him.
Yeah. So I think Tank will be back for another deal, but I think it's going to have to definitely be a very team-friendly one.
And I think you're right in that, like, we saw CJ's reaction when Tank got hurt.
Oh, yeah.
He was brought to tears. We know how close they are. The podcast tour that CJ went on, Tank was there with basically all of them. And, I mean, the story and the legend goes that CJ was, you know, going to bat for Tank when the Texans were thinking about drafting him. So I could see all that factored in, the relationship, being from Houston and all that, the Tank maybe decides to come back on a team-friendly deal. But I think that's makes – circling back to Christian Kirk, I think that's what makes going after a veteran like him so important, because you look at this wide receiver room, and the only thing you really have guaranteed – the only thing you have guaranteed over the next couple of years is Nico. That's it. Like – So I think, and we'll see if they restructure, because remember, Joe Mixon was also in the final year of his deal when they brought him in, and they decided to add a couple more years on top. Christian Kirk, I believe, is 28, so he's certainly, if healthy, and I feel good about his injuries, because, I mean, when it's a broken bone, like his clavicle, I'm not as worried about it like the Tank injury, right? Yeah. We're talking about ligaments involved. So if Christian Kirk is healthy, maybe extend him, and you're able to bridge that gap, so not only this year, but going in years forward, you're not desperate. You're not in a desperate spot for wide receiver. Because I think that was part of why it was so important to get Christian Kirk now, is I would hate for them to go into the draft with everyone drafting around them going, oh, well, they're going to go for a wide receiver.
Yeah.
And now if we need a wide receiver and the Texans are picking 25, where are we trading up to? We're trading up to 24 to jump in front of them. So
yeah.
I always think it's good to put yourself in a situation where your needs don't look desperate. That way you have flexibility and some surprise there with the teams around you as far as being able to execute your draft plan.
Well, and let's not forget, I mean, the reason why Caserio pulled this off like the Mixon trade is because he knew that if Kirk hit free agency, there would be a lot of teams going after Christian.
And he might not have picked you, yeah.
Yeah, and so this is a way that you're able to get a guy in that, you know, is from Texas. It seems like he wants to be here. So I think it would make sense.
Yeah. I mean, College Station's 2 hours away.
Yeah.
So I mean, I would definitely see. I don't know if he would have picked the Texans had he been an unrestricted free agent, but I think they would have been, you know, on the list.
Oh,
he would at least talk to him. But yeah, why not, for the cost of a seventh round pick? Are you kidding me? Let's take out all, you know, what ifs from the scenario. Let's just make sure we have Christian Kirk, because like I think if Nick Caserio from this point forward never wants to make a seventh round draft pick again, instead of that, every year he just goes and picks up a free agent that's about to be cut, sign me up.
Yeah.
Like, because what are you getting from a guy you draft in the seventh round? I know everyone's going to go, oh, Tom Brady. Well, sixth round pick for one, but two, like, that's one in a million.
Yeah, and
like the average seventh round pick doesn't even make the roster, much less make an impact.
Exactly, and arguably Kirk's two best seasons came with Jacksonville, and I think Trevor Lawrence is a more comparable quarterback to C.J. Stroud. When Kirk was in Arizona, obviously Kyler Murray's very talented.
He had a good year with Kyler.
But Kyler is very different than C.J. Stroud and Trevor Lawrence. Very much
pocket
out of the pocket.
Mobile.
Just running all over the place. And so maybe this will be a better fit for Christian Kirk anyways than Arizona.
Well, I think I wouldn't expect a massive uptick in his production, but I do think this is the best quarterback he's played with.
Yeah.
I mean, so anyway. All right, there's some more. We're going to get into more of the wide receiver news as it regards to the Texans. Like, they could obviously have chances at guys like Devontae, DK, Debo, and Shaq Mason's cut to make room for salary cap. So we'll talk about that in the state of the offensive line on the other side of the break. ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. If you want to get in the conversation, give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line. Talking Texans now. Astros coming up later. 1 o'clock, we're going to talk about this NBA media drama, and of course, Mount Rushmore plus one at 1:30. So give us a call or text again, HRMP listener line 713-780-3776. Bullpen will be back in a couple minutes. Don't go anywhere.
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
His own tweet saying it's a joke, we're just having fun. ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Cam and I guess part of that might have been caught on air there, but Cam and I were just talking about J.J. Watt continuing to troll people over the return, the possible return to the NFL playing for the Bengals, which I don't know where you'll put that on the likelihood scale. I'll put it at about a 0.5%. Like, because he'd had the thing where, you know, if our goalie doesn't give up any goals the rest of the season, and the dude didn't give up any goals for like 13 straight games, so incredible run by that goalie, but he finally gave up a goal, so okay, JJ's not coming back, not that he ever was. But now, after his team, Burnley, I think it's Burnley, scored four goals in a game, he's now tweeted, if we score four goals in every game, I'll come back and play. So he's JJ fully trolling NFL fans, specifically the fans of the Bengals.
Well, the Bengals need him now.
I think they needed him before. They could use JJ when he's 50 and got one good leg. I mean, let's be real. That defense was straight trash last year. All right. ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome back into the bullpen. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, and John Bilmer here with you. Again, if you want to join in the conversation, hit us up on the HRMP listener line, text or call 713-780-3776. We spent last segment talking about Christian Kirk coming to the Texans, whether or not we feel like that fixed the wide receiver room. And there's been a lot of, and continues to be, a lot of wide receivers available, kind of the merry-go-round that is the NFL offseason, which the legal tampering period, which the worst name in sports, starts on Monday. So there's going to be a lot of wide receivers on the move. We already had one with Deebo Samuel getting traded to the Commanders for a fifth-round pick. Obviously, we know DK Metcalf wants out. Looks like the Seahawks are going to trade him. We were kicking around on the on the Killer Bees the other day because I think people expect him to go to the Packers. But and I'm not just saying this because you're sitting next to me, Cam. I think he ends up with the Chargers.
DK?
Yeah, I think he does because they've been clearing salary cap. They cut Joey Bosa. Khalil Mack's not re-signed yet. And Ladd McConkey's great, but maybe he's more of a slot natural. Now you can have DK as your true alpha on the outside. What would you think if the Chargers traded? Because the going price apparently is a first and a third. Would you be for that?
No.
Too much?
No.
Okay. What's your limit? What's your cutoff?
So if it wasn't for the money that he's asking for.
Yeah, because he wants $30 million a year.
I would be more open to trading a 1 and a 3. But because he wants over $30 million a year, a 1 and a 3 is just extreme. So I'm willing to do up to like a second round pick or maybe a third round pick and throw in Quentin Johnston to get DK, because apparently Seattle actually had interest in Quentin 2 years ago, 3 years ago when he got drafted.
Okay.
And we're talking about teams that need receivers. I mean, hell, Seattle released Tyler Lockett. They're trying to trade DK. So all they have is Jackson Smith and Jimba. Like,
who's really good, but they definitely need another receiver.
Yeah, especially with not knowing who their quarterback is going to be.
Well, that's the other thing. Now Geno Smith ends up, if you didn't see the news last night, he got traded for a third-round pick to the Raiders. So
yeah, so I definitely think the odds are still high that the Chargers sign him. I think that he would be a great complement to Ladd. It kind of bring back those days of Keenan Allen and Mike Williams when he could stay healthy, because Keenan's obviously a really good slot guy, and Mike Williams was...
Keenan might even be returning. That's been rumored.
Yeah, for a cheap deal. If Keenan is your three, then I'm okay with it. And then not to mention, the Chargers released Gus Edwards, which now they have almost $99 million in cap space. So they
plenty of room for DK. Plenty of room for DK. I think the Chargers make that move. We'll see what ends up happening there. But let's go through some of these other wide receivers that could have been available to the Texans before they decided to go with Christian Kirk, because I think, I mean, by all accounts, they're obviously going to clear up some cap room, and did yesterday with the release of Shaq Mason. They'll probably restructure a few more guys. But I think because of what they're paying Christian Kirk, which is like $16.2, $16.5 million, they're done at the top or middle level of the market for wide receiver. Obviously, they still need to fix offensive line, especially interior. I think they have some interior defensive line depth they need to look at. And this is a team that was, before the Shaq Mason release, I believe about $500,000 over the cap. Okay. So maybe they go out and do another Robert Woods 1 year, $5 million sort of contract for whatever the 2025 version of Robert Woods is. But they're done at the top of the market of wide receiver. They add to this room, it's either extremely cheap veteran, like $5 million or less, or it's somebody in the draft. So
yeah,
these names we're about to say completely off the table. So setting the table there. Let's start with Davante Adams, because this comment you're about to hear came from about a year ago, where he was on a podcast and talked about quarterbacks he'd like to play with.
What about C.J. Stroud? What about the other young buck?
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. That he may be number one. I don't know.
Yeah, C.J. Stroud is on.
C.J. Stroud. That was somebody I was campaigning for coming out. So I won't say I was anti-rookie, but I was not, you know, pro-rookie across the board. It wasn't just get somebody young, you know, in here. It was really, that was the guy that I felt strongly about, and he felt the same way. I know I've seen a couple of videos where they had asked him who he'd like to throw to coming in the league, and he said me. And I actually got to kick it with him at Michael Rubin's all-white party out there in the Hamptons, and we kicked it for probably, like, literally 8 hours. And dude is solid. Like, I've never been around a dude that young coming in that, you know, that's that mature, other than probably Trey Tucker. Like, those two dudes, probably two of the most mature rookies that I've been around.
So, Davante Adams.
High praise.
High praise. First off, they hung out for 8 hours?
I like how you name dropped, too.
Yeah, yeah.
The all-white party.
Yeah, the all-white party there in the Hamptons. Like, okay. Can't relate to that. Never been to... Okay. You guys ever been to the all-white party in the Hamptons? Belmer strikes me as a guy that's been to the all-white party in the Hamptons.
I wish.
I've been to the one in the Heights.
You went to one in the Heights?
Well, the Heights, the little festival that they throw every year, the White Linen Night.
Oh, you've been?
I've been there once or twice.
Okay. How was it? Is that your sort of scene? That's your sort of vibe?
I mean, it's literally like going every other night to the Heights, except for the theme is all white.
Except for you're far more likely to get your clothes dirty because it's all white. So Davante Adams apparently loves CJ. And again, important to note, that was a year ago. So I don't think his opinion has changed all that much, even though CJ did have a down year compared to his rookie season. But clearly, Davante Adams likes the way CJ's played and maybe put CJ on the list of guys, or make the Texans on the list of teams he'd like to play for because of CJ. And I think Davante has a lot left. Obviously, the year started. I mean, he did have one pretty good game with the Raiders. Week 2, 9 for 110. But you see, once he got back with Aaron Rodgers, you look at his game log. I mean, every week it's 6, 5, 9, 9, 7, 5, 6 catches. He's got a game that went 9 for 198. I mean, the dude still has a lot left in the tank, so I think he could have been a good player. And unlike what they did for Christian Kirk, because he was released, wouldn't have cost you anything as far as draft capital, but the price tag probably would have been higher than $16 million. So how are you feeling about missing out on Davante Adams?
I mean, the door is not completely shut.
Oh, it's shut.
But
it's shut for this year at least.
And I know that he said he wants to play with CJ, but there was so much talk about how he wanted to return to the West Coast, which is where he played college. It's where it's played for his teams. And so it just, I mean, Davante with CJ would have been nice, but Davante is also, I mean, I don't want to, a lot of these receivers are getting up there in age, and he's still the best.
Yeah, he's still a better player now, even 2 years older than Christian Kirk.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's proven to be healthier.
I'm not.
Sounds like you're not disappointed they missed out on Davante.
I'm not disappointed, but I'm also not like. I never really expected it to happen. So I don't really have like a feeling.
Like you don't have any FOMO because you never really believed it was a possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think that's fair. You mentioned the West Coast thing. Like we were breaking this down the other day because I think people were, you know, clutching pearls and hand-wringing, like, oh my God, Davante. But when you think about what Davante would go to in free agency, one, I think like all free agents, and I don't blame anyone for this, get the bag. But one, he's going to go for money, and as we talked about earlier in the segment, the Texans don't have money. They're over the cap, so he's not going to be able to get the big payday here. Two, you mentioned West Coast. He wants to play in the West Coast, played at Fresno State, obviously decided to go to the Raiders when they were still in Oakland. So he obviously wants to be in the West Coast, obviously Houston Texans, not West Coast.
Nope.
And the other thing, so the Texans can't give him the money. Texans aren't the locale that he wants. Okay. What about chance to win a Super Bowl ring chase, because he doesn't have one yet? Well, I mean, I think the Texans are a playoff team, but they're certainly not at the top of the list as far as teams you'd want to go ring chase with. You'd ring chase with the Eagles, the Chiefs, the Bills, the Ravens. Like, the Texans would be probably not top five I don't think that's a controversial take. They're not a top five ring chase team. So I don't know what box other than, hey, like C.J. Stroud, that the Texans will really check off for Davante Adams.
Yeah, and also further to Davante Adams, it's just it's so weird to gauge where he's going to go because, like we just mentioned, he did say he wants to go to the West Coast, but he also wants to go to a contender. Well, there is no California team that is
the Niners.
I mean that
Chargers.
I mean, I love the Chargers.
They were a playoff team.
They were a playoff team, but I still don't think the. Well, I keep, you know, obviously it's not Oakland anymore, but I don't think any of the West Coast teams are ready to win a championship this year. So I'm wondering where his head is like really at. Unless Rodgers, well, nope. I don't know.
Rodgers, the rumor was like he could have gone to the Raiders, but obviously that's not happening now. He could go to the Niners if he wants to back up Purdy, but they're not starting Rodgers over Purdy, so I don't know. I think if Devontae, if he's dead set, like it's got to be West Coast. It's got to be a team that can make the playoffs. It's really just the 49ers and the Chargers.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I say that Rams, obviously. I guess I'd have to look at the Rams financial situation. Obviously, they're parting ways with Cooper Kupp, but Rams could make some sense too. I mean, you have another great wide receiver on the other side of you. You got a really good quarterback, even though he's up there in years with Matt Stafford. So there's three teams that kind of make some sense. So. Quickly, let's name off two other names. Just tell me if you regret the Texans missed out on it or not. But Debo and DK, any regret there that the Texans went the route they did for Christian Kirk instead of pursuing either DK Metcalf or Debo Samuel?
Well, I think DK was going to be off the table no matter what,
because of the money,
the money and the picks that you have to give up, and then with Debo,
only a fifth round pick,
but it. We've seen the health concerns with the Texans wide receivers, and then you're going to...
I mean, but they got Christian Kirk. I mean, Christian Kirk's...
Very true.
He only played 19 games out of 34 the last 2 years.
Yeah, very true. So I think Debo is probably the one that I think they missed out on. With the highest possibility to get, the one that they missed out on the most is probably Debo.
Johnny, any wide receiver amongst this group you regret missing out on? Or in comparison to getting Christian Kirk?
Not necessarily. Davante Adams a little bit, obviously, because he's Davante Adams. But you have Nico Collins to throw to. So, I mean, I don't know if Nico Collins is going to have the career that Adams has had, but he's sure on his way there. You've got that guy on your team. So I'm not really worried about missing out on any of these guys. Really.
And they're still wide receivers that we talked about in the mid range, the cheap range, that are still free agents. I mean, they could still go after Darius Slayton. Hell, last year there was a good chance Keenan was going to get traded to the Texans, but the Chargers wanted a one round higher pick in return. So there's always Keenan out there. I know Marquise Brown is
Hollywood
Brown is injury prone, but he would be another cheap.
I would love Hollywood, and actually like Slayton. I think outside of having to play with Daniel Jones, he's actually a pretty good wide receiver. Yeah. I think, though, you're right in that they'll cost less than Kirk. They'll cost less than these other names we mentioned, but I still think it's going to price them out. Like, I mean, Tutu Atwell just got $10 million.
Yeah.
The reported market for Darius Slayton's being set around $12 million. And I just don't see with the Texans still having other holes to fill and being even with the if they postmark Shaq Mason's cut, and we can get into this on the other side of the break, but if they postmark Shaq Mason's cut for post June 1, then they save $9 million, but you can't use that now.
Right.
So I mean they wouldn't have that. So let's assume they do that. You're still right around being over the cap, $500,000. Obviously they'll restructure probably a few more guys. They've already restructured Nico and Aziz Alshire this season. Apparently, Danielle Hunter's wanting a contract extension, so maybe you do something him where you give him in a couple extra years some more money, but it brings down the AAV to where it gives you some more salary cap room. But even with all that, especially if Shaq Mason's post-June 1, because the difference between post-June 1 and now is $7 million extra, so I think you got to do that. I just don't think they would have room for a $10 million wide receiver.
No, I think the only one basically on this list that they could get is either Keenan or Tyler Lockett, and I'm pretty sure Tyler Lockett is going to go to the Raiders to be reunited with Pete Carroll.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That makes a lot of sense. All right, let's carry over one part of this Texans conversation with the cut of Shaq Mason, state of their offensive line, and then after that we'll get into the Astros and with Cam Smith here, we'll get into the Cam Smith hype. I mean, who's more well-equipped to talk about Cam Smith hype than a guy named Cam Smith? ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Bullpen, we'll be back in a couple minutes.
ESPN 97.5. Is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in, Bullpen. ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5 here on a Saturday in the great city of Houston. Cam Smith, John Bellmer alongside me, Brian McDonald. And if you want to get in on the conversation, call or text us on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776, as a couple of people did. First off, we missed, I guess, it looks like this news broke right as the show was starting, so we missed this. But Hollywood Brown, who we talked about in the last segment, has now re-signed with the Chiefs for pretty much copy and paste the exact same contract he had last year, one year, $11 million. And Cam, you were telling me that this might be due to another Chiefs wide receiver getting in trouble.
Yeah, so Xavier Worthy back in trouble with the law. Apparently, he was arrested for like a domestic battery or domestic violence.
Been a rough few months for former Longhorns, Justin Tucker.
This one's bad. And Worthy's obviously, this is not his first time with a run-in. So it definitely makes sense as to why the Chiefs were super quick to re-sign.
When you say it, like Kareem Hunt bad, speaking of Chiefs?
We don't
have to get into levels of because obviously any level of that is bad. But
according to this report, he choked somebody out in his family.
Okay, that is really bad.
That is really bad.
Okay, well, if that is... We'll see. Obviously, there's going to be a whole process with this, but he shouldn't play a game next year if that is true. Another text that came in on the HRMP listener line from 0265, Michael Gallup is coming out of retirement. Should the Texans pick him up? I mean, he does fit the bill of what I talked about with the 2025 version of Robert Woods, and he's someone who's had, you know, a good season or two in the past with the Cowboys. I think he's had at least one 1,000-yard season. So sure, like if he wants to come here on a 1 year, like $2.5 million contract, why not? I'm willing to throw that dart at the board, but my expectation would not be for Michael Gallup to come in and like make a difference at this point. Like, when's the last time he was relevant? 4 or 5 years ago?
I mean, it's crazy that he retired after only 6 seasons, but yeah, I mean, he hasn't played football in 2 years. I feel like this would almost
be pull up his game. Go ahead. I'm going to pull up his game page so I can figure out like when the last time he was actually good.
Well, 2019 was his 1,000-yard season, and then 2020 he had 840 yards, and then every season after that he never topped 450. So this almost seems kind of like a Deontay Johnson move. Like,
well, okay, so I didn't realize this, but was that his rookie year when he had 1,100 yards?
His second year.
It was the second year. Okay. For some reason this page I'm looking at has that as being the first year listed for him. Like you said, 843 the year after in the COVID year of 2020. So the last time he was relevant, COVID was still running wild.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time since Michael Gallup. We're talking 2021, 22, 23, and then he wasn't even in the league in 24. So 4 seasons have gone by since he was last a relevant player. Again, if it's a 1 year, $2 million, whatever. I'll throw the dart at the dart at the wall. Let's see what sticks. But I would not be willing to do anything significant with him, and I wouldn't expect any great production out of him.
Yeah, I mean, there is no pressure to pay this guy. So you offer him something super cheap. If he says no, he goes to somewhere else. Like,
yeah, exactly. No, you move on.
You're not losing out on absolutely anything if you don't get him.
All right, so let's get to the other bit of Texans news. And if you have thoughts, again, like the last person who texted in, call or text us on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. But the other big Texans news this week, besides Christian Kirk, came the day after, I guess, in the part to make room for guys like Christian Kirk and make room for the upcoming draft class. But right guard Shaq Mason, who the Texans traded for a few years ago from the Patriots, has been cut. I don't know if there's been official news yet, if it'll be a post-June 1 designation or if he's cut now, but it makes no sense for not to be a June 1st because you save a little over $9 million.
Yeah.
If it's post-June 1, where if it's now, you save a little over $2 million. So I can't imagine Nick Caserio will turn down an extra $7 million. So let's just say, even if it's not official, it is a June 1st cut. But the thing to talk about going forward for the Texans is, you know, obviously where their offensive line is. I think right now, if they had to go and play a game tomorrow, your offensive line is probably Laremy Tunsil at left tackle, Titus Howard at left guard. Your center right guard in some combo is Jarrett Patterson, Juice Scruggs. I'm not sure how they would flip them. And your right tackle is the second round pick from a year ago out of Notre Dame, Blake Fisher, who did play a little bit last year but was not a full-time starter. That obviously is not a line I hope they go into the season with because it was a line that got brutalized. But I'm willing to, I guess, hold out some hope that the blame goes on Bobby Slowick and Chris Strouser, who they both fired and now have hired a new play caller and obviously promoted Popovich to be their new offensive line coach. But if you had to pick one spot, again, Tunsil, Howard, Juice and Jarrett and some center right guard combo, and then Blake Fisher at right tackle. If you had to pick one spot, who are you replacing?
Probably. Well, so the Texans official depth chart is very close to what you said. Tunsil, Howard, Patterson, they have Kendrick Green at right guard and then a right tackle.
Yeah, but that's
Blake Fisher.
I don't know if they've updated their depth chart. That's probably
no
still going off.
There's no Shaq on here.
Okay, maybe I guess they have. Okay, so, I wouldn't have expected that to have been updated.
It was on there last night, so they must have just updated it.
I think it doesn't matter if it's left guard or right guard. I think guard is what you have to fill in next. I mean, you already have plenty of tackles. I mean, Blake Fisher's a tackle. Tunsil's obviously a tackle. Howard's obviously a tackle that they're having to play at guard because the guard's position is so inconsistent that, for me, it's either Kendrick Green or Kenyon Green. One of the greens is
I would hope they're not playing to play either, and that the two greens are depth behind Patterson and Scruggs, who I think outplayed those guys. I can't imagine, like, I know he's a former first round pick. His rookie year he actually was pretty decent in the run blocking game, but obviously has just been a disaster as a pass blocker. I would allow for some minuscule amount of hope that he could develop under a new offensive line coach and a new offensive play caller in Nick Caley. But I'm not going into the season penciling him in as a starter. Like, he would have to start as a backup and work his way up. But I'm with you. Like, the one place I'm replacing is guard. Yep. And then I'm letting Jarrett Patterson and Juice Scruggs fight it out for center and, yep, like, you know, best man win. And I probably would lean Jarrett Patterson. He was certain the offensive line played better once he was moved to center instead of Juice, but I would allow, obviously, for a camp battle to pursue there. But the reason I asked the one is because of what we talked about with adding Christian Kirk to the roster, the limited amount of cap space, even with the Shaq Mason cut. This dream that I think a lot of us had of replacing two, maybe even three offensive linemen, I think is kind of dead. Like, unless they just decide to go first round, second round, third round offensive line, which I don't think they'll do,
no,
then I think the idea of a complete overhaul for the offensive line is probably going to look like replacing one starter. So I think that's what we're looking at. Like, which starter is it? Take your choice, because they're not going to be able to overhaul the entire offensive line.
No, and there's not, like, going through the list of top free agents, there's no...
And Trey Smith got taken off right away because the Chiefs franchise tagged him.
Yeah, and we've seen some guards be, you know, have been traded.
Joe Tooney.
The last, like, couple weeks. But, like, even looking at this free agent list, like, the guard position is, like, so thin. I think the best one...
Who are the top couple names you're looking at? Or according to that list?
So, according to this list, the top guard is going to be Will Fries, and okay, he is projected to get something around 4 years, $60 million, which I don't think they're...
The Texans are out. They can't afford it. Like, Kevin Zietler's been a name. Does it have a projection for
Kevin
him?
Kevin Zietler's up there. Now, he's a little older, but he might fit that spot because his is projected about 1 year, $9 million.
Okay, so that's something... There you go. I think that is a... That is an, and it's funny that we mentioned Zietler. I mean, one, he's a part of a great offensive line in Detroit, so there's some pedigree there. He's played really well. And I don't know if you remember the thing CJ did a year ago with Micah Parsons, where they picked, like, their starting 11. CJ picked an offense,
yeah,
Micah picked the defense, and they kind of talked about the hypothetical battle they would have. And he picked – CJ picked Kevin Zietler?
Zietler, yeah.
I don't remember how you pronounce it. But he picked him as one of his guards for his hypothetical offensive team. So,
well, and that Detroit offensive line has been –
it's been great.
Super.
Best offensive line of football.
The last couple years.
That or the Eagles. They're 1-2.
So that would be a good addition. And then I think the money per year is there for the Texans. It just, Tevin Jenkins from the Bears, he's 26. He's projected 3 years, $30 million. So that's.
I think your best case scenario, if you really want to get as close as you can to overhauling the offensive line, is I think the Texans can do enough creatively with restructuring to get cap room to get to the 1 year, $9 million for Kevin Zietler, however you pronounce his name. And then you draft a rookie in the first three rounds to come in as either a competition for, you know, the center, like with Scruggs or Jarrett Patterson, or at least be depth. That's probably the most you can do with the offensive line.
Yeah.
So anyway, all right, we got to get out. We went a little longer with the Texans than I anticipated. On the other side of the break, we got to talk about Cam Smith. No, not that Cam Smith, the Astros Cam Smith. I mean, no offense.
My twin.
No offense, the far superior Cam Smith. I don't think you might be saying that, right?
Athletically.
Okay. All right. I'll give you that. Maybe they're, you know, grilling sausage in a microwave at work. You might be the superior Cam Smith.
Oh, I'd crush it.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
I assumed you knew.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome back into the Bullpen. Getting to some Astros now. If you have thoughts or opinions you want to share with us, get into the conversation on either Cam Smith for the Astros, not this Cam Smith, no one wants to talk about him, or Lance McCullers Jr., give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So, Cam, let's talk about Cam. It's going to get really confusing, Johnny. My head might explode before the segment's over. Actually, I'm kind of hoping Cam Smith doesn't make it, so it's less confusing on Saturdays. Is that selfish?
Yeah, it's selfish.
That's probably selfish. All right. I kid. I do want Cam Smith to make it, the baseball player. Cam Smith hype. Let's get into the Cam Smith hype. There's been a lot of people. I mean, you never know how much it is. The quote unquote vocal people on Twitter are probably just, you know, an overall minority of the overall fan base. But there's been a lot of people pretty vocal to see Cam Smith make the Astros opening day roster, and I totally get it because the dude has been unreal. So far in spring, he's sitting 636. 636 he's hitting. Now, that's only an 11 at-bats, so 7 out of 11, including 2 home runs, a triple. And 11 at-bats, he has 4 walks. So 15 plate appearances, 4 walks, which is crazy. And then again, he's played 6 games, has 7 RBI, so more RBI than games played. He's been unreal, but I think we have to, like, just pump the brakes a little bit, realize where this kid is at in his development, and not rush things, because I get that he's been amazing, but one, spring training stats don't really matter that much. We've seen, I mean, remember Justin Dearden a couple years ago was unbelievable in spring. Obviously, nothing happened in his career. So spring training stats, while it's impressive what Cam Smith has done, don't really mean anything. And the kid was drafted last June. I mean, this is not someone who's been in the system or, you know, the Cub system prior for, you know, several years, moving his way up through the system. This is a guy who was drafted last June and has only played 5 games at the AA level or higher.
It's almost like Paul Skeens, just choof.
Yeah, well, and Paul Skeens went to the majors in less than a calendar year, I think.
Yeah.
And I think Cam Smith can get called up this year. But again, he's played 5 games in his life above the single-A level. He got drafted last June. We're talking about he's been great this spring, but it's 11 at-bats. I mean, this is so, so quick to expect Cam Smith to be ready for major league pitching, which, again, he's not really facing during spring training because he's facing guys that won't make it. He's facing guys that are going to get sent down to the minors. And he's facing guys that, even if they're established, they might be working on stuff. They're not really going after him the way they would in a regular season game. So John, Cam, tell me where you sit, but I think we need to pump the brakes on Cam Smith. Let him go down to Double A to start the season in Corpus, and let's check in on him in like mid-May or June and talk about a summer call-up.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, offensively, he's put up a ton of numbers. That was what was talked about when we first traded and got him. I think for me, honestly, one of the more impressive things is his walk to strikeout ratio.
Only, yeah, 4 walks and 15 plate appearances. Yeah,
and
it's awesome.
And just 1 strikeout. But I'm with you. It what we've seen so far is really good, but it's such a small sample size. And again, it's not against the most competitive parts of baseball yet. So I definitely think that he's going to get called up at some point this season. I don't think it's going to be opening day. But, you know, there's such a, I don't know, there's just so many players on this team where it's just, where do they fit in? That I think that's kind of why we won't. I think we have to see what other players do, like Paredes and stuff like that, that play similar like positions. So that's why I kind of think he's not going to get called up initially. But I definitely think that by the midway point of the year, he's going to be on this team.
And I think that's what you mentioned there with like some of the position part of it, like defensively. The other, like, even if you disagree with us and say, well, he should come up, because I hear the argument of, I would not keep Cam Smith down because I wanted to play a John Singleton or a Jake Myers,
yeah,
or a, you know, who's the right fielder they picked up that was on the team last year? Not Hummel?
Cooper Hummel?
Yeah. Whoever these
Ben
guys.
Ben Gamble?
Huh?
You talking about Gamble?
Yes. Ben Gamble. Sorry. I don't know why I had Hummel in my mind. I would not let guys like Ben Gamble and Jake Myers or John Singleton, like all these back of the bench type players or poor offensive players that are probably starting, stand in the way of Cam Smith. Like, I agree with that part of it. But one, what we talked about with the experience, extremely small sample size, I'm a little worried about that. I don't want to rush him. I don't want to have him come up and struggle and lose confidence. And the other part of it, like, even if you disagree with that, just look at what the Astros are telling us with what they're doing. If he was going to play, he's going to play right field, right? He's played 6 games, doesn't have a single play in the outfield. His entire playing has been at third base, which right now would be obviously Isak Paredes. We're like, okay, well, maybe Isak could play second and Cam Smith plays third. Well, Isak has 0 games during spring training at second base. So I think the Astros are telling you by not playing Cam Smith in the outfield and not moving Isak to second base that Dubon's going to be your second baseman, Paredes is going to be your third baseman, and they're not going to throw Cam Smith in the outfield with 0 plays under his belt during spring training in the outfield. So I think we can write off Cam Smith as a possibility to break camp with the major league roster.
Yeah. I mean, and even if if you're grooming him to play in the outfield, you better start playing him
in the outfield. Like, if the plan was, okay, this kid hit 2 home runs like his first game, let's fast track him. I mean, wouldn't you be playing him in the outfield? Like, I mean, Johnny, what do you think about this Cam Smith situation? Are you wanting to call him up right away, or are you more with on Cam and I's side?
Not a chance. No, I'm on your side. Not a chance he makes the opening day roster. Like you said, he hasn't played more than 5 games over Double A. Let him get some time at Sugar Land. It's literally a 30-minute drive if you do decide later on in the season you want to give him some at-bats at the major league level or whatever you decide that looks like, or you have some injuries and you want to bring him up. Whatever that looks like, he's right there at the AAA level. I think that's where he needs to be. That is good competition, consistent, like good, at least big league level pitching-ish,
yeah.
Right? And I think that's right where you want to develop him. Yordan spent how much time down there hitting bombs? That's what I'd like to see.
Yeah, I don't remember how much time he was there.
He was. They were clamoring for them to call him up for months and months before they eventually did in that season. That's exactly how they should handle Cam Smith's development.
Well, and even more so, like, if you try and make the argument of, like, okay, he hasn't played in the field, so he's not ready for that, DH him. Well, no, because Yordan. So,
well, and right. Altuve. Like, your DH is going to be Yordan or Altuve.
Yeah, there's, like I said, he's obviously performed really well in a very limited time, but he's not ready. Like, and you don't want to rush him. Have him struggle, send him back down, do this whole flippy floppy.
Yeah, you don't
want
to yo-yo.
Send him back down. Like, no, don't do that.
He needs to get consistent. Oh, the other thing, like, if you called him up, okay, maybe he plays some in the outfield, maybe play some in third base, but he's probably not playing every day, right? Because you're going to want to get looks. Hey, let's see if Chaz has recovered his previous form. Well, obviously, they're going to get Jake playing time because he's, at least on the defensive side, a really good center fielder. Obviously, Isak is going to play. And we apparently, it seems like we got good news on Christian Walker, so it seems like he will not miss much time if he misses any at all. So, like, if you brought him up, even if he breaks camp with the team, he's probably not getting regular everyday at-bats. And for his development, again, five games above the single-A level, he needs everyday consistent at-bats. I think that's got to be – I mean, Johnny said triple-A. I'd probably side on double-A. But either way, I'm fine with that. But it needs to be consistent everyday at-bats until you have an everyday spot for him on the major league roster. And I just don't see that as being a possibility to start the year. Let's quickly get into Lance McCullers. Johnny, if you can get the Lance McCullers audio ready. He threw 20 pitches to three Astros hitters last Saturday, a week ago. Jake Meyers, Christian Walker, and John Singleton. Hit 94.7 on the gun. Earlier this spring, like when pitchers and catchers first reported, he was hitting like 89. So it's gone up. He's also throwing his curve, his sinker, his change. So he's hitting. I mean, if he could hit 94, he's back as far as velocity goes. He's throwing his other pitches. He's throwing to live hitters, which was the first this last Saturday, which that was the kind of the next step in his development. And everything, all the quotes you hear from Lance, I'll read one, and we'll hear from Joe Espada about Lance McCullers. But he said, today's a pretty good indication the arm can handle the workload, can handle the velo, McCullers said. I probably have a little bit more gas in there as I get going to be able to throw sliders with freedom and curveballs with freedom and not worry about extending fastballs each side of the plate and have my mind there versus having my mind on how's the elbow feeling. Today is a big step for me. So I'm not ready to say Lance McCullers is back because it's never about getting to this point. It's can he stay there? Can he throw 20 games for you? Can he recover in between starts? And one live batting batting session for 20 pitches doesn't prove that. So I'm not willing to get excited yet for Lance. But he is so far, for the part of the recovery he's in, is checking all the boxes. Let's hear from Joe Espada on Lance McCullers Jr. and his excitement for Lance's possible return.
I keep saying he's going to pitch some big games for us. He's super close. He hasn't pitched in 2 years, so we need him to go and pitch some innings in AAA and build up that way. But you'll see him pitch some games here in spring training. He's close. His stuff looks good.
His haircut looks good.
Yeah, his mindset is in the right play. I'm excited about him, man. I really am. This guy's pitched one of the biggest games for us. I remember 17 being on the other side, watching him start against one of those big games against the Yankees. So he's in him. Just got to stay healthy.
So he's hitting 94, Cam. He's throwing against live batters. The full repertoire is there. He's not sore. You hear Joe Espada say he's going to pitch in spring and he's going to pitch for us this year. Are you hyped? How you feeling? I think that was an indication right away.
I have with McCullers, I don't expect much.
Okay. If I put the over-under on 9.5 games he pitches in the regular season, which side are you on?
Okay, so game-wise, I'm comfortable going over.
Because the last time he pitched in a regular season was 8 games. That was 2022.
Yeah, I'm okay going over the over on 9.5 games, but that's nothing to get excited
about. I mean, he was really – that's the other part of the equation. Not only can he get back, but can he be what he was? Because as Joe Espada mentioned, it's been 2 years. He last pitched in a game in Game 3 of the 22 World Series.
Yeah.
In a game where he wasn't good in that game either. But getting back, period, is one part of the question. The other question is, like, is he still as good? Now, he was good in those 8 starts in 2022, like when he came back in August. His ERA was, I believe, below 3. It was, like, I think high 2s. But it's a big question mark. Not only can you stay healthy, can you be there between, the throw 80 pitches in the game, recover in 4 days and come back for that fifth day for the next start. But are you also as effective as you were in 2022? Johnny, what is your level of excitement for McCullers, and would you take the over under of 9.5 games started this year?
I think I'd take the over on that reluctantly. I'm a bit more
reluctantly.
I'm a bit more optimistic this year. Obviously, last year early on in camp, it was like, oh, setback, I believe it was. Like, yeah. you already knew. Like, there are lots of positive things being said. He does look good throwing off the mound. He seems to be confident and positive. So I think I will take a little bit of that, and I'll go a little over 9 just to be on the safe side here. But I think we'll get some Lance McCullers Jr. action for sure.
All right, so if I gave you – and we'll go to break after this. But if I gave you 1 to 10, 10 is just – you're crazy hyped. Where's your hype level, Cam?
6.
Okay, that's more than I thought you would say, Johnny.
Yeah, that's higher than I thought he'd say. I was going to say 5.5, 6. So.
Yeah, I'm right about a 5 because I just don't – it's great because, like Johnny said, like when he's tried to do this before, there's always been a setback by now. Like he's progressing beyond levels that he ever got to in previous off seasons. So I am starting to see the positive signs that maybe this one is real. But until he's actually pitching – even just in a spring training game against real hitters, not his teammates, and it's more than 20 pitches, and he could come back from that and do it again and again and again and repeat it, then I'm not going to up my level to, like, you know, a 7 or 8. But that's kind of where I'm at.
And it's not just the games. Like, okay, yeah, you pitch over 9.5 games, but, like, are you pitching 5 innings a game? Like, is that all that we're
– they're going to kid glove him, for
that's
sure.
That's what I'm saying. But, like, that – averaging 5 innings, like, doesn't tell me that you're back. And then the quote where it's like, today's a pretty good indication the arm can handle the workload off of 20 pitches.
Yeah. Like, okay. What? You're right there.
But he said he's been on a pretty consistent routine of doing this over and over and over. So
I hear what you're saying, Cam, but and as Johnny's kind of saying there, like, you got to prove you can do 20 with no setback before you can do 40, before you can do 60. So again, it's baby steps with Lance, but we got to get out. We're a little bit over here. On the other side of the break, we got to get into some of this NBA media drama. Stephen A. Smith versus LeBron, Kendrick Perkins versus Charles Barkley. A lot of war of words going on in the NBA. None of it really about what's going on the court, just kind of the media members fighting with themselves, and one of the greatest of all times fighting with a media member. But that on the other side of the break, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.